So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Draft value index, bids, draft deficit, primary list spots. If you don't know what any of that means, you're in the right place this week on the Code AFL show. I'm Josh Barnes. I've got Ed Burke and Glenn McFarlane with me. Ed, we sent you down to the AFL HQ this morning to try and wrap your head around everything that has changed in the draft, the bidding system, all that sort of lingo. You were there. You're going to run us through everything in the next sort of 10 minutes or so. Where do we start?
I had the honour of being invited to the AFL's draft briefing, which took place at the same time as some big Melbourne news
Any
across
pastries?
Town. So it was the B team over at AFL House learning about the draft. A lot of terminology to get the head around. Yeah. That's the main thing. I've had to really get familiar with the draft value index, which is the point system that was brought in 2015 and has really defined the last decade of drafting. The teams that have gamed the draft value index the best, like Gold Coast with their spreadsheets
the DVI,
last
as
year.
We call it, yeah. With a bit of humour there, the DVI. Yeah.
What
draft
else
value index.
Draft value
index. There you go.
Yeah, the DVI. Sorry. Yeah.
What's the biggest change? What's the headliner?
Well, the main thing, the mechanism that has changed that will be the most difficult for clubs to adjust to is that only two picks can be used to match a bid. So we knew that something like this was coming, but it's effective straight away in this year's draft. No more hoarding of picks in the 30s and 40s to secure a Will Ashcroft.
Yeah,
I believe it's something like the combination of 34, 38, 40, 41, 42 that Brisbane used to get Ashcroft, and then a similar
looks fair now, doesn't it?
Similar combination to get Jasper Fletcher. No more. That'll be something like giving up picks 4 and 11 to match a bid if it came at pick 1 for Will Ashcroft. So that's the main change.
And why has the AFL done that? Is the theory that they are going to force clubs' hands into getting rid of senior players to get father sons or academy players? Is that the theory?
Yeah, competitive balance. So Brisbane now, if Will Ashcroft was in this year's draft, they would seriously have to consider parting with Zach Bailey, who's a restricted free agent. If they used him in a trade or they sent out an established player, they could get the higher draft picks that they need, because you need a higher draft pick now. You basically need a pick inside the top 10 to get anyone in the draft. So the top clubs pay up more, or they just don't bid for their players, which opens up the access to top-end talent in the top 10.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's upset that this is coming in. It's just the question of when it's coming in, Barnsley, I think, and Ed as well. Like, we did need a realignment. Some of these clubs have got away with murder, in a sense, to be able to get through what they really wanted, to get those players, to stockpile a list of players. But I just wonder whether we didn't need a longer lead-in time. They started talking about this, the AFL, about July last year. We're already, you know, basically seven rounds into a season.
Yeah.
And there's clubs like Carlton and Port Adelaide who are going to be furious, Ed.
Yeah, allow me to parrot Greg Swan, who just briefed me. I'll fly the flag. He said there's no perfect time to implement this. And obviously, Carlton and Port Adelaide, who have players on the way, have a vested interest in pushing it back. Could they have been nicer to these clubs, perhaps, and grandfathered it in a couple of years down the line? Yes, potentially. I think there is an urgency to their changes because they are worried about what happens to the bottom teams when Tasmania comes into the comp.
Yeah.
This is the last draft before Tasmania comes in and starts to take a lot of those top picks. So I think it's essentially to help Richmond and West Coast and potentially North Melbourne, depending on how they go for the rest of the season, get access to some top picks.
You look at that; those other clubs that are most affected, and that's Port Adelaide and Carlton, they're down the bottom reaches as well, or could be down the bottom reaches. So it's going to be fascinating coming in. You're right, though. If you're Richmond and West Coast, you're feeling okay at the moment, in a sense, aren't you?
Yeah, and part of that is because they're going to be getting an extra first-round pick, potentially.
Mm. Yes, so there are compensation picks that are being introduced as one of the changes. That applies to clubs that will have a natural selection in the top five at the draft. So a natural pick –
Natural.
Sorry, okay. Natural selection wasn't the right phrase to use. That can mean a few things. But your natural draft pick is the one that you're given based on your ladder position. So if you finished in the bottom five of the ladder and you don't trade that pick for a player, you take that pick into the draft. If there is a bid in the top five and your pick gets shuffled back, so it usually goes back one
and you're
spot,
the team doing the bidding.
Even if you're the team doing the bidding?
Yeah.
And you're but under the new system, if you're doing the bidding, you're probably using that pick in the top five anyway, unless you've got a remarkable draft hand. Mm. So we'll talk about that in a sec. But if your top five pick shuffles back a spot, you will receive a compensation pick at the start of the second round. So instead of a really clogged up first round like we had last year with, I think, 28 picks or something like that, instead it will be a very bloated second round. There could be, if there are three bids in the first round, high in the draft, there could be three compensation picks at the start of the second round. But you only get one compensation pick per club. There's no point hoarding top
five
picks.
You can't just keep bidding over and over again.
Very hard task. But say if Richmond had picks four and five and they both slid back, they'd still only get one compensation
pick. And that makes sense, doesn't it?
And if you're Sydney and you've managed to trade into the top five, well done, Swans, if you pull that off, you don't get a compensation
pick. So with that, like if you cast it back to the 2021 draft, I think, Barnsley, which is one of the more interesting drafts when you look, North Melbourne take Jason Horne-Francis. Would they do that again if they had their time
over?
Didn't work out great. Under the current system, Nick Dacos was obviously there as a father-son. Sam Darcy was two, Dacos four. Under the current system, North Melbourne would be almost duty-bound to take one of those players who are linked to either father-son or the like, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Because you've got access to that start of second-round selection there, that extra pick.
Yeah, well, one thing those changes do is incentivises clubs to put those early bids in. We're not going to see those players
slipping.
The bids
are going to be
anymore.
There, yeah,
so
absolutely.
What Swan has said is they want a more natural draft order. They want the best players to be reflected in the order.
Yep.
And it's almost, there were clubs that pushed for the top 10 to be completely anyone's game, open season.
So no father-son matching.
Yeah.
Ooh, imagine that.
That would have been a very radical proposal. It didn't get up. But essentially what all these little changes have done is chipped away at clubs' power to bid on those players anyway. So there will be players who slip through. Mm. I think we will see in the next few years a highly touted father-son or academy player who goes in the top three and a club isn't armed to match the bid even if they want to.
Yeah, it's fascinating how that's going to play out on draft night when you think, isn't it? So,
do you think that's good, Macca, that father-sons might slip through the cracks because the club can't afford it?
We had to change, Barnsley. We had to change something. I'm a massive fan, and every time I mention it, father-son, I get howled down by, from teams outside of Victoria who haven't probably had as good a, run in terms of father-son. That'll change. I'm a romanticist in the sense of a father-son, but we had to change. So that's just life, isn't it, in that sense? So I think I can see that. My only issue is, and my only gripe, is that I think we should have been talking about 2 or 3 years down the track with this rather than bringing it in immediately now.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate we didn't get a full trade period for those clubs to prepare. But
Completely. They
knew something was coming, so Carlton did prepare. Speaking of Carlton, they and Port Adelaide are the two thought as the big losers, I suppose, from this change. In those examples with Cody Walker and Dougie Cochran, what does it mean for those fans watching and listening right now?
So we know Kevin Sheehan on Code Sports has released his
great shift. You can read that right now.
His top 70 for the 2026 draft. As part of that, he's put out a provisional top 15. It's in no specific order, but it has both Cody Walker and Dougie Cochran. And they've both been touted
at
different times
end.
Over the last
top
year
five,
as potential pick one.
Top five, maybe even fraction higher. So
let's say Carlton faces a bid on pick one for Cody Walker, and say the Blues finish 16th where they are at the moment, they get pick three. They would need to use pick three in a bid for Walker if they took that into the draft.
Yep.
They'd probably also need, they'd need a pick within the first 27 picks. So we've crunched the numbers in the DVI. I won't go through the specific maths, but they need a pick within the first 27. So
they have a pick from Sydney in that Curnow trade.
Yeah. So they could use that, or they could trade back. They'd probably trade back from pick three if they were in this situation and use a pick as high as they could in the first round. But it would be 3 and 27. And that's with a 10% discount that you get on the draft points if you finish in the bottom ladder between 11th and 18th.
It almost wasn't there, was it, Ed?
No. And it will be expanded to 9 teams when Tasmania enters the competition. Mm. So that's a flat change from 11th to 18th, which means there's no real incentive to tank for a draft discount. It's just anywhere that misses the finals gets that discount. if Sydney was trying to match a bid on, if Sydney had someone who was being bid on at pick one, they would need to give up a lot more because of the 20% loading that would apply to a top two team. So by the end of the season, that would mean a grand final team. Yeah. But just for the sake of this argument, that would be a combination like picks 4 and 11 or picks 6 and 7. So a top side would have to trade really aggressively to be in that situation. At least Carlton finishing in the bottom half of the ladder would have fewer points to cover.
It maybe makes for an interesting trade period, doesn't it, really? I think it's going to be, clubs are going to be more willing to really unload and, as we said before, to get rid of some of those high-end players because you need to get someone else through the door.
And it might be the trades that don't happen as well. So the case was made that Gold Coast had this bumper academy crop in last year's draft, five players. The case was made that their trade with Melbourne for Christian Petrarca, they would have had to choose between making that trade or securing Zeke Euland because they wouldn't have had the points to match that bid. I think it was at pick 4, might have been earlier.
Yeah, so with that, though, that's fascinating, isn't it? Like, that's what you say. If you're Gold Coast, I wouldn't say you've got away with one, but you absolutely haven't you, in that sense?
Yeah, they've hoarded the high hoarded talent. The I think one of the other big losers for me out of this talent. Is the team that finishes sixth last, so in 13th. At the moment, that's Adelaide on the ladder. That'll change, I'm sure, by the end of the year. But if you're in the top five, you're in a much better position than in the bottom five than if you're sixth last because you miss out on that chance to get the extra first-round pick. And that's where I'm concerned about creating more incentives to lose is you don't want to finish sixth last. That gets you nothing. But if you finish fifth last, you're a chance of getting something. So that's my concern. I think it's good that they discourage tanking by making it flat, as you said. But
there's that little.
Once you add incentives, teams start thinking about those incentives in the last few weeks when we know they send players in for surgery early and all
the
that
early
stuff.
Surgery could be back. Yeah.
There's going to be a crunch there, I think, to finish in that bottom five because you don't get any benefit for finishing in 13th compared to, say, 15th.
We might not see those top five picks change hands very often anymore either because the incentive is there. If you keep that top five pick, you can get access to that compensation pick. But anyone who gets your pick in a trade no longer has that access.
I think that the point you made is a good one too. The law of unintended consequences. We've seen it on the field. Could we see it off the field at some stage as well?
Yeah, we've talked about losers. Winners, Brisbane and Gold Coast probably because they've hoarded that talent in so far and they didn't have to pay the same they will have to pay from now on. Any other winners for you, Ed?
Anyone who's benefited from the previous system in recent years is a winner. So the Western Bulldogs with Sam Darcy.
Collingwood with Nick Dacos.
Those are the main ones. I think the teams that finish right at the bottom and don't have anyone coming up in the pipeline that's really popping out are winners. So Richmond and West Coast for mine will do well from this if they get a top five pick in this year's draft.
What about Tasmania? They have to trade some picks we're expecting when they get them, but they're going to own almost every single pick for the next 2 years. Are they just going to be able to sell them off at a king's ransom to help teams get in line for academy selections?
I could do some serious wheeling.
You can have a pick and you can have a... It's going to be it's going to be fascinating to watch, isn't it?
And the Devils are also well protected because of this extra competitive balance. One of the points that Greg Swan made, I'll just parrot him again from the briefing, was that they don't want to see a team sitting down the bottom reaches of the ladder like North Melbourne has for the last six years. It's going to be a bit easier to jump off the bottom now with these changes and getting better access to those players in the top 10. So Tasmania is well protected. If they don't get off to the best start, if they have a Gold Coast-like start to their existence, they should be able to rebuild quicker because they'll have more spending power in the drafts even once their access is reduced.
Yeah, and you don't get pushed back to pick 5 or 6 without any sort of compensation. So I guess that's a plus for them. I feel pretty caught up, Ed. Is there anything else you need before we move off this complex issue of draft?
I think we've covered all the main things. I might just touch on the deficit changes. So there's draft deficit in the DVI economy that we've been discussing. And previously, clubs could enter a deficit of up to 1,167 points, which I'm not sure of the reason why it's worth that much, but it was worth the combined value of picks 18, 36, 54 and 72. So at the end of each round, that deficit has been slashed by almost 70% to 412 points. 412 points is interesting because it means that if you're prepared exactly to match a bid on pick 3, you can just get into enough of a deficit. So the new maximum deficit of 412 points would allow you to scramble and match a bid on pick 2, but you couldn't get to pick 1.
Okay.
So it just makes it, it's another one of those things that makes it a little bit harder for teams to plan if their player goes a bit earlier than they expect and it gives more incentive to another team to put a bid on early.
You need to be a mathematician now, I think, don't you, to actually a beautiful mind almost to be a recruiting and a list manager at this time, isn't it?
The spreadsheets are vital. Ed, I think I'm pretty caught up. I think you've done a pretty good job there.
Well done,
you need a break after what's been through your head, so we'll get Corey to sit in your seat for the next couple of minutes and then we'll drag you back in after that. Well, I needed a break from that draft points index, so we've got to more numbers now with Corey in, the guru from Champion Data. Let's talk about actual footy on-field stuff, Corey. You've got a couple of teams you like where they're heading, a couple of teams you're not sure about. How about we start with North Melbourne? North Melbourne fans have altitude sickness. They're up so high at number six on the ladder at the moment.
It's not a bad lot.
Yeah, tell me they're staying there.
Yeah, look, I think you look at their draw this year, easiest draw of any side in the competition of the completed season. 4-3, would have loved to have pinched a couple more there. I think from a positive point of view, their contest and clearance work has really led the way. That's been strong. Their pressure game. So if you watch a North Melbourne game now, their contest and their pressure has been, you know, the pin up to their game. And also their ability to move the ball off halfback. That's been really strong this year. And that's kind of a measure that's correlated with premiers and they're number one in the competition this year.
It's quite a few changes there, isn't there, in that sense? Yeah. And just on that, are you seeing them as a wild card possibility at this stage, Corey?
I think we're going to find out kind of where they are, you know, over the next 6 weeks. And you look at their next 6 weeks, they've got the hardest run of any side in the competition. Starts this week, they travel down to Geelong, Sydney, they travel to Adelaide, Gold Coast, little bit of a freshen up with their bye, and then Fremantle. So I think we're going to find out more about them in the next 6 weeks. And more so for me, it's how they hold up behind the ball. And that's been an aspect to the game, which has let them down. You look at their profile this year, they've made small inroads, but you know it's still an aspect that I'd love to see improve. And I'm not necessarily suggesting that needs to jump to top six or, you know, top three defensively behind the ball, but they're currently the sixth easiest side to put an intercept onto the scoreboard against, and then the fourth easiest side to move the ball against from defensive 50. So that's the watch for me across the next 6 weeks.
Doesn't surprise me. I think their defense is always going to be a question mark. Yep. I think personnel wise they've moved a lot around that halfback line, but the key pillars still need a bit of work. They've won once at down at Geelong since 2007, and they've been routinely smashed down there. So a good litmus test for them this year. Brisbane Lions are sitting fifth on the ladder, but I think most of us, I think we're in agreement, Macca, that they're probably number one in our hearts this year. Give us a chink in their armour, or are they just going that well, Corey, that a three-peat looks like it's on the agenda?
Yeah, they're travelling well. I think if you look at them, you look at their season so far, they've had the second hardest draw of any side in the competition. They've got out the other end of it. They're 4-3. But it's more comparing their offense this year compared to this time last year. And they are in really good shape from an offense point of view. So you look at this year, scores per inside 50, they're second. At this time last year, after round seven, they were 14th. Better shape.
It's worrying.
In that regard, intercept to score. So how often you put an intercept onto the scoreboard, they're second this year. Forward half game, you know, obviously that, you know, their pressure and their ability to win the ball back in that part of the ground. They're fifth for generating a forward half intercept, fourth for scoring from a forward half intercept this year. So they're the kind of aspects last year that were bottom 10 in the competition after round seven.
And defensively, how are they holding up in that area as well?
Yeah, look, it's basically a dead ringer, you know, their defense and their ability to defend ball movement. Basically a dead ringer to this time last year. And as we know, that improved as the season went on.
So, scary.
Yeah, which I'm is concerned. Really,
yeah, be afraid, really scary. Be very signs. Afraid.
The other one is that their draw does soften up now a lot. Oh,
so even more good news for Lions.
They get a little bit of personnel back behind the ball. Even more good news as well. So I think they're in really good shape, the Suns.
Where do you see the Suns? Just talking about the Suns. I reckon, Bunzi, they're fascinating at the moment. It's just when you think you can trust the Suns, you can't trust the Suns. Where are they sitting at the moment?
I think with the Suns, we know what they're good at. Their offense, you know, is the pin up. Their territory game is really strong. I think the aspect for me now, and it's coming under the spotlight, is their defense. And I keep going back every time I sit down and I look at Gold Coast and have a look at their run. Post their mid-season bye, that draw is really going to test them out. So it's a 7-game stretch where it's Brisbane, Geelong, Hawthorn, Fremantle, Collingwood, Adelaide, and the Dogs, who hopefully are a little bit healthy.
Not sure how many you give them out of that bracket.
Yeah, it's tough.
And especially the way they're going defensively. So they've conceded 100 points now in four consecutive rounds. It's the first time they've done that since 2019. You know, you just look at some raw measures. The points against 10th this year. Last year, they were 5th. Scores per inside 50 against this year, 12th. Last year, 7th. So I think for them, they need to get in order behind the ball because that 7-game stretch is coming and it's going to come fast. Mm.
They need to sort some things out, Mac. I mean, Mac Andrew is all over the place there. He's playing in a lot of different positions. Damien Hardwick has talked about big boy months. He's got a big boy 2 months coming up there. What do you see with them?
Well, I think you're spot on there. As I say, you think you can trust them, but there's little issues and little holes there that are a problem. Does Mac Andrew need to settle down in one position? Do they need to find the right spot for him? It is going to be fascinating to see where they're at. Everyone, I think, was starting to expect earlier in the year that they'd be a top four side.
Yeah.
I think I'm prepared to say they're not a top four side. They're going to drop down. Now it's a question of where they will finish in that bracket. And I think we're, you know, going to be watching for the next 2 months.
Yeah, it'll be a disappointment for them not to finish top four, but the way they're defending at the moment.
Not at the moment.
It's a revolving door, really, that defence.
Yep.
It is expansion cup time this weekend. They'll be playing GWS. They're the lowest team we're going to talk about here. They're 14th on the ladder, but it's not as bad as it seems, Corey.
Yeah, 3-4, and I think you've got to take into consideration they've had a tricky draw and have been crueled by injury. So, you know, last couple of weeks, Daniels has returned, Cadman, Bedford. So they're getting some personnel back. Sam Taylor's the big one. Now he'll eventually come back into the side. So it's a bit of a twofold with the GWS discussion. I think what they're doing well is what they've done in the past. Ball movement, number one team in the competition. Post-clearance ground ball, number one team in the competition and streaks clear of the next best side. But I think with them, and you look at the previous two seasons, they've never really been a strong territory side. Mm. So timing forward half, inside 50 differential, winning a forward half in a set. But that is starting to improve. The North Melbourne game took a little bit of a hit on that profile, but that is improving, as well as defensively behind the ball. And, you know, they haven't had Taylor. Buckley's missed a couple games, you know, and the likes. That is still in relatively good shape.
Yeah.
You look this year, fifth hardest side to score against going inside 50, second hardest side to move the ball against from half back. So I think if you couple this all in together, next 6 weeks is important just to get back on track and get some wins, you know, tick the win column. You know, I think there's 4 winnable games there. If they can split a couple of them, I think they're in really good shape. It's more now just, you know, starting to see that win column tick over.
Yeah, thank goodness for Griffin Logue not being called touch for them. Otherwise, 2-5 would be a lot different to 3-4. It was a massive win for them on the weekend. Corey, brilliant as usual. Thank you for coming in. We'll have you back next week.
Beautiful. Thanks,
mate.
All right, it's time for quick hands now that Corey's out and Eddie's back in. We're always on milestone watch at the moment, Mac, around Scott Penery, but he's taking a break this week. What does that mean for when he's going to play, and what do you think that means for potentially a day with West Coast?
Yeah, I think this has been in the pipeline for a long time, guys. There's been a lot of discussions going on inside Collingwood, and I think they always pinpointed that West Coast game in a few weeks, in a month away. Like, they play Hawthorn on the Thursday night. He was never probably going to play. I know Kane Corns was very upset that he didn't play, but he was never actually going to play in that game. The 5-day break, the Geelong, he'll equal the record against Geelong the following weekend. He'll rest for the Sydney game. He didn't look like he needed a rest, but then would then play that 433rd game, the record-breaking game against West Coast. And I can see why the Collingwood's doing it. They did want to organise some breaks for him during the year. Boys, the biggest home and away crowd, Collingwood and West Coast, this is aside from finals, was 62,957 in 2012. Could he get 90,000? You think back to Dusty in 2024, which was his third last game. It won't be Pendlebury's third last game. It was 92. This is against Hawthorn, Richmond Hawthorn, 92,311. Could we get 90,000 for a Collingwood West Coast home and away game? Seems crazy, but there's a chance.
Yeah, that'd be an amazing occasion for Willem Dersmer and Josh Lindsay and Cooper Duff Tytler running around from 90,000.
Yeah, they got 38,000 when they played last year. That was at Docklands, so that was under the roof, small stadium, obviously. But yeah, what's your guess, Mackie? You reckon they'll get 90?
I reckon they'd get, let's just say 90, between 85 and 90. 90's a huge crowd. But it's such an occasion. We know he's going to, you know, we wrote a number of weeks ago that he's going to wear the gold number 10, the AFL.
You're onto this
that
early. Yep.
That would have clashed with Hawthorn's jumper a little bit.
Well, that's
so it's
part
probably
of the reason why he couldn't.
Well, West Coast has a bit of yellow.
Yeah, they do. But I would think between 85 and 90. It's a huge occasion. It's massive. I think it's a really important game. And like, I know there's been a lot of talk about him. He had to rest at some stage. Yeah. He didn't look like it in that last quarter. If he was going to play the Hawthorn game, and I don't think he was ever going to play the Hawthorn game, he would have been at three-quarter time just eased out of the game last week. Mm. If anything, he
was a bit
harder.
Busy after three-quarter time.
It's going to make it quite hard for the occasion of his 433rd game to live up to what happened on Anzac Day, because it just felt like the biggest celebration of his career.
Yeah, and having been lucky enough to see a lot of those, you know, 400-plus games, it was in his top five games of all time. Like, statistically, it was his best in the sense that, you know, he has the highest number of disposals. He, you know, it's not necessarily never really been a disposal thing with Pendles. It's what he does with the ball. But it's right in the top five bracket. And I'm going to have to try and come up with the top 10 for Pendles. It's not easy.
It's right up there with the most time and space I've ever seen him have.
That's because they were running the other way, I think, the Essendon players. Just quickly before we move off Pendles, is it becoming a distraction at all? They're not going that well, apart from big Anzac Day win. Are they too Pendlebury focused about this milestone, or do you think it doesn't really
matter? I think it's a massive milestone, and you cannot not be focused on it. You should be focused on it. This is history. We might never see this broken again, but I don't think it's impacted. In fact, I think it actually last week, seeing the way he played, it actually lifted some of the players. They were, you know, they couldn't score 100 points. They hadn't done it since round 17 last year. And speaking to Steele Sidebottom after the game, he had the biggest smile on his face. Mm. He said, "That's the most fun I've had in months and months and months." So I think it actually might give them a bit of a kick along more than anything else.
Yeah. Now, Ed, you were at Melbourne yesterday. I was there this morning after the big news about Paul Guerra being moved on from the Melbourne Football Club. Plenty of reporting about that on codesports.com.au. But you managed to sneak in what the entry bay or something to see what the food was going
on. So I was completely oblivious to something going on. But in hindsight, there was definitely something going on because Stephen King's weekly press conference was essentially in a broom cupboard around the side of Amy Park. Melbourne have these little offices in there that belong to the Demons and the Storm and Victory. And the Demons' little administrative office was open. When I got there, a guy was trying to drop off a shipment of bananas and salt and vinegar chips. And he was asking, "Oh, where should I take these?"
Combo.
And I've just directed him around a corner being like, "Oh, in there's probably okay." But yeah, they were trying to keep us out of the heart of the club. There are obviously meetings happening, and Stephen King's done a pretty good weekly press conference under pressure there, because he might have been worried that the question was coming, like, what's going on?
It's fascinating how it all panned out. And Barnsley, the removal obviously happened yesterday morning, but the decision was made a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it was worked through a couple of weeks ago, as we've written on Code Sports, and Steve Smith started approaching a man on the board, Dan Taylor, the head of Stan Streaming, and said, "Do you want to take over?" So that was wheeling and dealing behind the scenes before Paul Guerra had any idea about it, and he was unceremoniously shafted earlier this week. The difficulty finding space in Amy Park was real today. Melbourne Storm and Melbourne Victory, I think, were both there. So the press conference involving Steve Smith and new interim CEO Brian Cook was held outside, basically at Collingwood's training oval, which was quite bizarre. It meant that we were standing there watching Caleb Windsor walk up and down stairs. He had to do some funny rehab loading because he was a bit sore. We're encouraged that he will be playing this weekend, but he didn't train. Instead, he walked up and down the stairs in front of a full throng of media. And then as we were starting to depart, we saw Jake Melksham in full Lycra getting on his bike. As they were beginning training 5 minutes later at Gosh's paddock, Jake the Snake said, "I'm not trained today. I'm going home. I'm a bit sore as well." Started to pull out of the car park and almost got cleaned up by a white car. So they could have almost lost the CEO, one of their best key forwards, within 24 hours.
Was there any more reasoning? We know that there'd been a falling out between the board and Paul Guerra. Was there any more meat added to the bone in regard to that?
Well, clearly the relationship between Smith and Guerra had deteriorated very, very quickly. He decided that Guerra was not bringing the club where they wanted to be. I think there's a lot of discussion about Caulfield in particular. I mean, we know Guerra was sort of brought in with a racing background. He's on the board of Racing Victoria, and doesn't appear the club has made that much progress on Caulfield, so I'm sure a lot of that will be worked out down the track. But it is interesting, and it is interesting that Guerra, Brian Cook said one of the issues with Guerra was that he's not a football person, and then Dan Taylor's been jetted off the board to lead the football club, and he's not a football person either. And Brian Cook was asked about it and said, "Oh, you probably have to ask Steve Smith about that." So
I thought that was the gold element of the press conference. It was quite funny.
Yeah, there's plenty more of that to come out, I'm sure, in coming days, as we said on codesports.com.au. But otherwise, we'll be getting ready for a key weekend of footy, and we'll be back next weekend on the next edition of the Code AFL Show.